So, Tania Acheron, thanks again for joining us to chat about content. In fact, I should say to you, I can't remember which way around it is now, but the Creatrium podcast that I did with you previously is either the one with the most downloads ever or the most views. It's one of those two things.
Really?
Popular, yeah. So that's good. But we're talking particularly today about the Body Hotel. Yes, and in particular, an event which is coming up on the 19th of June. So just for those people who don't know what the Body Hotel is, tell us a little bit about it.
Great. So currently the Body Hotel is a dance movement psychotherapy social enterprise, and it focuses on using movement as a tool for well-being. And it has two branches. So right now it has two arms, one arm that's been around. It's great to actually see you because in a podcast, you can't see me gesturing. But yeah, so one of the arms is an old arm, which was about employee and staff well-being. So this started in Scotland, actually, in 2013, actually, where I was lecturing over there in the dance movement psychotherapy department, and I was trying to find this space of respite where you could do personal development, also professional development. Mm-hmm. So I was also trying and very curious about combining my techniques of training because I'm an artist, so I like more exploratory things in terms of movement, and then the dance movement psychotherapy training, which I'll call DMT or DMP for short. And also this drive to have a respite, because you know better than anybody, when you're in the caring professions, you're in the teaching professions, you're always kind of giving. And unless you have an excuse like CPD, you don't take the time to do something for yourself. So that started as a series of workshops. It was like a little day retreat, way in the days when you could actually get into the studio with people and move together.
Good days.
Good days, the good times. And so it was fascinating because we had a cross. I wasn't sure who was going to show up to this. And then we had new moms and financial analysts and then youth workers and nurses, doctors, psychotherapists. So all these people started moving together once a month. And then I ran it again for 6 months, and it was very well attended. So when I moved to Wales, then I was trying to find my own, And obviously, you know, with full-time employment at the university, it's really hard to kind of balance all your loves. And when I started, I decided, I was like, let's just try it out. I'll do a Body Hotel Cardiff, and it sold out. And then I tried it again. And then China asked me to do one. So yeah. I went to China. Mm. And I did that. And then, I have one coming up in Norway because we had to postpone it for the pandemic, would have happened by now. And Dundee asked me, we have a group of counselors, can you do this? So I started kind of seeing the need for it, particularly within professional arenas. And then having a coffee with a colleague from Arts Council Wales, had kind of one of these kind of high getting to know you meetings.
Yeah.
And they were like, have you thought about doing this for the NHS? It's before the pandemic, by the way. This is November 2019. And I was like, wow, okay. Yes, well, of course, you know, this would be perfect. It would be perfect for people to do that. And then a pandemic hit. And people started really valuing things that we have been saying for a long time, that, you know, movement, physical activity, getting out, engaging with art and creative expression are vital, but not things that are luxury items. Like, you know, there's this kind of, as you know, this discourse of the luxury items of the arts. And actually it's not. It's a way to cope. And with some advice from the startup studio at USW, with Richie Turner, has said this to me, like, Tania, you're going to have to become an organization. You're going to have to become a company. I'm like, no, I don't want to. This is, you know, I wasn't sure. And then as funding changed and emerged, and actually when I started getting more momentum, university health board started getting in touch, and really amazing the fact that in Wales we have an arts and health coordinator, right, for the health boards. So Eselt George was the drama therapist, and who's also an arts and health coordinator for Cymdeithas. She's like, can you do a staff taster? I was like, sure, I'll do it. So yeah, so it's a long story to tell you about one of the arms, the older arm about employee well-being.
Okay.
And the new puppy, I call them puppies instead of babies. The new puppy is Movida, which is a branch, Movida in Spanish, because you know that's my first language, being mm-hmm. from Puerto Rico. Movida is like a collective movement, is a term for collective movement. Mm-hmm. Has different political notions, but here I just really love the idea of moving together. And so several things started happening because of the pandemic, as you know. I started trying to find out who my dance movement psychotherapy crew was here mm-hmm. in Wales, because I was feeling quite isolated and wanting to connect. And I did that also in Latin America. So now we have a Latinx dance therapy network as well. So the pandemic kind of forced us to go, right, who are my people? And slowly but surely, I got introduced to them. Now we're seven. So Dance Point Psychotherapy Wales Hub, DMP.
They're all
Hub.
Welsh, the other guys, are they?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, so they live in Wales.
Yeah.
So Donia, West Wales, Aberystwyth, Rhonda, you know, you name it, they're there. So I was also, they had recently graduated, or you know, I think 2015 maybe, and some recent graduates, one that's moving this summer from London, right? So I'm really passionate about making dance movement psychotherapy visible and legitimate in Wales, and that because, as you know, dance programs keep getting cut and dance keeps getting
yes
underserved or dished away or funded less. And actually what we've learned now is it's important. Movement is really important. And so with that in mind, with the fact that there are people who are starting their professions, and I want to make Wales the place for people to come from London, from there's only 5 training programs, maybe less in the UK, and as they're closing, my Scotland one closed as well in 2015. So it's like, I feel like there's a targeting of dance, which is unnecessary in the UK. It's unnecessary because it's so, I think it's just equal and important. Yeah, essential. That's my hashtag usually. Sometimes I put movement is essential. But anyway, with that in mind, I wanted to nurture that. And I decided then to establish a private practice branch.
Okay.
That's the new puppy.
Yep.
So Movida, we have a resident dance movement psychotherapist who's working freelance for us. We serve, the Body Hotel serves a kind of the booking agent in a way, holding all the services, contacting blah, blah, blah. And putting people in touch with the right psychotherapist and the right modality for them.
So the Body Hotel, I'm guessing one night, 4 o'clock in the morning, you woke up, you got, I got it, the Body Hotel. How did it come about? It's a great name. You know, tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, thank you. It was a combination of things. I was in Edinburgh, and I remember the exact moment when that came through when I was walking. I used to live right behind Arthur's Seat in Edinburgh. Have you been to Edinburgh? It's one of the most...
No, I've heard of it. I've not been.
Yeah, it's just the highest point. You see 360 views. So that was my background. So I used to do a lot of walking in nature around there. And I had just come through. There was an amazing production called The Dance Hotel, which was in Aberdeen, mm-hmm. and City Moves Dance Agency, who were the first people that just believed in me and went, right, you're a person with international experience, come with us, come and work with us. They've been like my, you know, my little soil, really fertile soil for all my projects, artistic, dance therapy wise. Mm-hmm. So you can't imagine, there was a hotel right next to the Aberdeen train station. And they commissioned artists to create individual pieces, dance pieces in each of the rooms.
Wow.
And a bellhop would greet you at the station, and they were all kind of dressed in 1930s yeah. stuff, and they would greet you, and you would get into the elevator with, I mean, it's the hardest part to sustain small groups of people. And then we used to go into those rooms. So the idea that, I was so inspired by it. And then another colleague of mine was doing this group called Soul Supervision, Soul Soup, with a dance movement psychotherapist who unfortunately passed away a few years ago. And they used to get together and do a little retreat. So these things were kind of happening, and I was like, oh, I want to create, where can you, and I love that this is what the tagline is, that checking out of the body, you know, checking out of your daily life, checking into your body. There's an ongoing term when you use dance therapy, you do a check-in, you do a movement check-in, you do a body check-in. And I don't know, it kind of like all these things were happening at the same time and different. And then, yeah, and that walk, I went, the body hotel. Yeah, it's a hotel for the body.
Yeah.
It says what it does. And now I've gotten a bit carried away, Steve, because, you know, I'm doing a video series called The Body Concierge, and everything's like a room name. Yeah. And I just love the idea that you're kind of having that space, but that you're, it's a virtual space. So you're creating it. You're the author of it. And then we start debunking some of the myths around around dance and around movement.
How is it perceived within the kind of NHS community? I imagine it's a fairly kind of new thing, is it? Is it, you know, do you have to sort of convince people, or how does that work?
I've got to be honest, I was anticipating a lot of resistance. And maybe if I had been talking about this a few years ago, but the first health board that I met, they were like, this is what we need. You know, we have so much stuff that's around talking, although we're doing that now, but, you know, not talking about things doesn't necessarily work for everyone. And also when you look at trauma and when you look at all the traumatic experiences NHS workers have been faced with, anybody, well, a lot of people,
yes,
have been faced with, not only the NHS, but the frontline workers, speaking about trauma. And there's trauma theory that really supports this kind of work, which has been really useful in these exchanges, that trauma is stored in the body. And sometimes speaking about it could be re-traumatizing.
Yeah. But
the way that we use symbolism and metaphor and play, and we start looking in different ways, sometimes it's completely nonverbal. They've really been drawn to that. That's one point. And then the other point is that the NHS is one of the most diverse workforces in the UK.
Yeah, sure.
So because we're more working with movement, you're not relying on English as a first language as well.
No.
Right. So you can process things at so many different levels and depths that language becomes irrelevant at some point. So even though art, psychotherapy and music therapy, I mean, they have programs in USW, they have more of a standing but we have a long trajectory of research. It's just the way it's not being accessed. So I'm trying to change that a little bit. And drama therapy as well, which is another emergent, you know, in Wales, drama, and even though drama therapy Wales has a lot of people, they've also, because they don't have a university program, it's a bit harder
to
get that access to resources and students get that seen a bit more.
Yeah. So what's it like, you say you're working with professionals. I mean, just to use an example, let's go with academics, right? So you're doing a session, and so you got these, you know, these boffins, you know, talk about all these kind of theoretical kind of principles all day long. You say, right, guys, now we're all going to have a dance. You know what I mean? How does that kind of, you know, play out? Or what kind of, do you have like an icebreaker or something you do?
Oh yeah, well, yeah. I mean, everything that they teach you that when you're training as a DMT is that you start with the client is. With professional development workshops, I have some goals in mind, but also I have a wide bag of different things and interventions to bring out if there's a particular need that arises in the group. That's our training, right? It's postgraduate level training. So you're trained in movement observation, which is really interesting online, gotta say. Not that we're analyzing, but that we start engaging with people non-verbally. So yeah, I mean, my first line of defense, particularly when we're doing academics, is to ease a little bit of the anxiety around moving, right?
Yeah.
But the other day, I was asked to do the NHS Legal and Risk Conference.
Right.
Yeah. So I was with the featured act in the morning, the first thing in the conference. I was like, oh my goodness. I didn't know that 100 participants were going to show.
Wow.
Solicitors, risk assessment people, like, it was amazing. So I had a plan in place, you know. I had, oh, we have, and then 100 people showed up, and some people wanted to do a bit of releasing of energy and de-stressing. Some people really reacted to, I do some activities that involve reflexivity. So we use symbolic aspects to reflect on our daily life, which makes it more accessible, right? So it's really not dancing around, but a couple of them were like, we just need a bit of a dance. So, you know, I made, so we did it. We had a dance break at the end, but it was because people wanted it. And I have this thing, I have a kamikaze thing that I've started with some of my colleagues. You'll laugh. Someday I'll do it with you. You don't know. My PhD, one of my friends, when she was doing her PhD, she used to host a dance break song. You know, you're in your thing all the time. And she would post a song, you know, a piece of music that she was going to dance to. She was my PhD older sister. This is a while ago, right? I finished my PhD in 2015. So I took it a bit step further and I started recording myself in a dance break and doing all these dance breaks, and people were really into that. Now I started calling someone, texting them and going, I did that with one of the members of our LGBT staff network the other day.
Yeah.
And I go, dance break? Question mark. And they go, what? It's like, pick a song. And they said, Gwen Stefani. It's like, okay. So we turned on our screens. We put their favorite song. We danced for 5 minutes. We said goodbye, log off. No conversation. It was just kind of, we danced it off. And then we were back to our screens. So it is about tailoring to your audience. Obviously we start, and also the fact that I'm not teaching anything. I'm not enforcing anything. I'm bringing a bit of a space with guidance and different tasks that you can engage with at whatever level you want to.
Okay. Yeah.
So that makes it also accessible with any person who has disabilities, or if you're in a wheelchair, it doesn't matter in a way, because you tailor, you know, it's like it's a question. It's like you said, like,
I suppose it's an interesting challenge, you know, because you're always working with different people, aren't you? So that's kind of fascinating. So just to say, I interviewed an amazing guy the other week. His name's Glenn Dean. If you Google him, you'll find that he's a top class photographer, but he also works in the health service. And in fact, he works in you know, quite intense environments, actually, sort of operating theatres, etc. But during the pandemic, he had agreement, pictures of staff. He took 7,000 pictures of people within that kind of emergency life-saving environment. And he was telling me about how stressful the second wave, you know, how stressful it was. It was just relentless, you know. So I'm just thinking for NHS professionals, you know, as well as patients, what you do, which it clearly does, allows for those people to release and let off steam, then, you know, what a wonderful thing that is, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the goals. There was a famous dance anthropologist, Judith Lynn Hanna, that looked at the functions of dance across cultures. And, you know, release and catharsis was one of the first ones. But then that's almost like first level, because there are other social functions of that, which is about connecting, about engaging, about reality testing, about understanding that the body is a resource for so many different questions that we have in life. But it's a resource that we're almost cultured, normed to not use. We're almost, you know, that's one of the things that I really love to do is play. Sometimes we don't get to play. You do that as a musician, don't you? You get to call it different things, but essentially is that being in the moment and being spontaneous, but using that as a source of data, as a source of knowledge. So we can see it as so many different levels. And it's also about shifting some of the cultural notions about dance. And from something very aesthetic to something that anybody can do as well. Of course, there's spaces for all of those. There's spaces for a high level, just like there is the opera and there's an orchestra. And in the same way, I think dance has been painted into a corner of this is only accessible for this set of people. But particularly in Wales, I mean, we have community dance, which is so important, youth dance, and there's all these different ramifications of it. But then when you go back into employee well-being, which is one of my passions, because I think educators are equally at risk. Anybody that is that in that position to hold a very big space and is in charge of other people, youth workers, community activists, anybody that has that responsibility, even if it's children, right?
Yeah.
Is at risk right now. Of course, there's a higher level of risk when you're seeing people die every day and you're trying to work with very limited resources, but there's also value in people whose spaces have been invaded and now you have to share your space with the dog, with the cat, with your kid running around. And then that those facets of all our being are being meshed into one.
So, yeah, really interesting. Again, as usual, always interesting to talk to you. Tell us a little bit about the event on June the 19th, because obviously that's not that far away. What can people expect?
Well, this is part of our launch weekend, you know, even though it's a relaunch or a rebirth, as somebody said to me this morning.
It's like a post-lockdown kind of thing, is it, in a way, or not? Is this sort of post-lockdown oriented as we come out sort of thing?
Well, in a way, but it is going to be online because I have a lot of colleagues joining in from different countries. So I tried to make it a bit later on a Saturday, even though it's a bit cumbersome for some people here in the UK. But if it's raining, maybe people will want to stay inside and come and join us. Essentially, because this used to be a bit like a one day or a full weekend retreat. I call it a taster because it's 3 hours, which might seem like a lot, but it's not. I've done little lunch and after work things for the NHS. It's been an hour. And people always say, we were left a little bit with wanting to do more. So the workshop, the Body Hotel workshop, will be a taster of some of the things and interventions that we use. And we're going to move through them experientially. I'm going to present very little on the Body Hotel, a little bit of the background, but the rest is going to be to move and to play and to celebrate. And so I will be bringing in some of the key themes around transition into new spaces, mitigating that and looking at how to create your own spaces of well-being within that. Because for some people, they're like, yeah, we've been out of lockdown. Or maybe, you know, some people, this is going to be really anxiety provoking, and this is going to be a very difficult way to adjust still to be safe, but also try to see how we can enjoy life a little bit more and enjoy engaging with people in spaces. But yeah, it's the irony because it's online. But I don't know. I think it's a pro and a con that I'm willing to take on for a little bit. Our sessions, the Movida branch is also going to do sessions online, mostly to protect from this kind of fluctuating lockdown things.
Yeah.
But also because then it makes it more accessible to people from other places as well.
Okay. And looking to the future, as hopefully things do free up a bit, how would people find out more about the Body Hotel?
So we have our websites, which is great. And we have a booking website. So now it's very kind of user friendly. Before, you had to like contact me and then I put it. We have a fabulous team of people. So we had an arts management intern, Emma Thorpe, who's working, you know, from finishing her master's in the Royal Welsh. And she's set up all the booking websites for people. You can even get an app on the phone to book into it.
Yeah.
The website now has some introduction to our resident, that's one psychotherapist, Amina Ali, who's based in Snowdonia, which is great. And then you can get to know a little bit more about her background and her approach, and a little bit about me as well. And then also, I started the Body Concierge, as you know. Mm. I still laugh, but I think it's just cute. And the Body Concierge, so I've started doing little well-being strategies on Instagram. So it's at the Body Hotel.
Okay.
And I'm just going to be reflecting, giving some tips. The dance break is in there. A little description of a dance break. We're trying to get a dance break playlist. I don't know what will be in your dance break playlist, Steve.
Wow, that's a good question. I'd have to give that some thought.
What would be your favorite song in the world that you could go?
Wow.
Like, I just want to, you know.
Maybe a good one for me would be something like Once in a Lifetime by the Talking Heads or something like that, you know?
Of course. You have to, you know, yeah. Everybody has their anthem. They just go, and just like.
It's a bit of a mad song, you know? Yeah.
That's brilliant. Yeah, so we can add that. We can add that to our playlist. So I'm hoping that Emma will... and then I will work together to like actually create a Spotify playlist with all the
great ideas.
Yeah. I've had a lot of disco because disco is my it's my dance break. I don't know why. Diana Ross, my mom is a massive Diana Ross fan, so, and my dad is a massive Earth, Wind and Fire.
Okay.
September was my birth song, so when I was a baby, when I was a baby, that's the only, he says this is the only way to shut me up. I don't know if it works anymore, but Instagram, we're on Facebook, we're Twitter. I try, you know, LinkedIn has been amazing because so many professionals have gotten in touch, which is great. So there's so many ways to contact, and we'll try to engage, or just email me because, you know, I'm obsessed about email, as you know. So, and I'm happy to have chats with people and answer questions. So I'm always, the space is always open.
So just noticing your badge.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about that maybe, and, you know.
Yes. So June is Pride Month for LGBTQ plus people all over the world, usually, even though we kind of extended, I think, July, August. I think Pride London is going to be in September. It's going to be on my birthday, September 11th.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Yeah, so I'm also doing it's going to be a busy June. My colleague from Mexico is telling you about the Latinx network, which is a Red de Mete Latinx. Red means network. She contacted me to do a workshop in Spanish to help create safe spaces for LGBTQ plus people, and it's going to be in Spanish.
Great.
gonna be insane. I'm like, oh my goodness, my business Spanish, even though it's my first language, but the business language has become English.
Yeah, of course.
So I didn't get funding. We applied to get from Arts Council Wales. We're trying to get a therapeutic support group for minority ethnic LGBTQ plus folk in Wales. Yeah. So we're gonna hope, we're gonna keep persisting and seeing if there's funders out there that want to sustain that project. And it's just my way of saying, when I wear this badge was given to me by one of the mental health coordinators and the Rainbow Families coordinator, one of my favorite people in the world, Jules Stapleton Barnes in Edinburgh. When I was doing dance therapy groups there, and she just showed up and gave me this badge. And I've tried to keep it. It survived several moves. Yeah. Survived the move to Swansea, survived the move to Edinburgh. Yeah. And it just signals to people that I could be, even though, a safe person to approach, to ask. You don't have to be LGBTQ plus, but if you're an ally or you want to be an ally, then that signals to people, right, I could approach her with some questions or research questions or
project. Friendly exchange, maybe.
Yeah. And then my friend, you probably can't see it, but a friend of mine for hand embroidered, Susie Dory, who's an amazing designer in Wales. Oh, she's just like, what? She does jewelry, but she hand embroidered a safe space one for me.
Great.
That's another gift from my friend. This is the Puerto Rican flag, but in rainbow colors. So I'm all rainbowed out in June, but usually my safe space and this badge are almost present in all of the workshops that I lead. It's just it's to send a positive message of it's okay.
Yeah.
I'll try.
Well, you know, it's been a very positive message you've got across today, you know, during the conversation. And thank you, Tania, very much. Good luck with everything. Hope it all goes well. And well done. Fantastic.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. June 19th. Oh, can't wait. It's like counting down the days. I'm doing another challenge. It will be interesting. I need to see all your challenges, Steve, to see if we can bring you into the dark side of movement, from music to movement. See?
We'll see.
Every interview, I try.
I know.
Get you on board. But we're doing a shape journal challenge where you send a photo of a gesture that symbolizes your day, as a really quick way of reflecting. So we're doing that challenge. It's been really sweet just to lead up and just getting a lot of photos, and it's almost like getting a hug from your colleagues, your friends, kind of saying, we support you. Being an entrepreneur, even though that word seems big, it's not easy as trendy as people think it is. It's a lot of believing in what you do and then working outside of your other work hours to get it done.
Thank you for going very well.
Yeah,
so you're doing great things, so keep it up, and thank you, Tania, for now, and speak to you soon.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Steve.
Bye-bye.